Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Lara, how are ya?
Oh, morena, of course your kid gets sick when all the Māori political drama's going down, but we're all good as a household, we're all good.
Powering through, right? There's plenty of lurgy going around.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the bonus is my kid got a tour of the kind of TV-free stuff studios the other day and met Paddy Gower, but, you know.
Whoa.
Like, I know, like, not that many 8-year-olds can say that, but,
okay.
Yeah,
they're in contention for
winter.
Coolest kid, I reckon, ever, now that they've met Paddy Gower. Just wait till they meet us.
Yeah, look, honestly, he had no idea who Paddy Gower is. If it was a YouTuber, yeah. You know, it's like that's what that Gen Alpha is like.
Hilarious. Well, Gen Alpha could be in a bit of trouble. We're going to lose fees free. What does this mean for us?
The earlier Labor government had introduced, like, first year fees free at university. I remember teaching at a university first years when the next year's first year was going to get fees free, and they were just so annoyed. But the policy came in, and then the national government through the coalition have changed that, so it was going to be the final year of your degree fees free, on the rationale that, like, well, first years don't really know what they're doing, they're just exploring, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of critiques of the policy have been that it hasn't actually helped equity, so that people from the kind of what was called a higher decile school under the old system, you know, people from wealthier areas are the ones that are more likely to go to university as a result of the policy, and that it's not necessarily helping increase equity.
Mm.
So that's been a big critique over time. But I think ultimately, we've seen actually Grant Robertson come out against this. I mean, as the Vice Chancellor of Otago University now, we've seen various, like, the Greens and various other people kind of come out against it. If having a third of your degree paid for, no matter what, for most people means a third less student loan, which means that, you know, regardless of whether they're middle class or not, when they're later in the workforce in their 20s, you know, that's a third faster paying off your student loan. And if you go overseas, that's less interest you're going to have to pay, right? So that's kind of a mechanism or something that does help young people along towards those, like, traditional kind of Pākehā milestones and everyone's milestones of buying a house, right? Of, like, you know, you want to be able to have some level of financial stability, having a third less student loan helps for that. So there are some things that I can imagine. And just for financial planning, you know, that's the other thing, is that people kind of plan or have this idea in mind of what they're going to do. I mean, imagine if, I know there's some pretty, like, switched on 16-year-olds out there now, you know, that would be quite a bum of them, having planned, you know, if you're 16, 17 now, and you kind of have seen this on the horizon, that how you're going to go to uni, you're going to study this or that, you know, there's another 12 grand, 10 grand that you're being saddled with of debt. So, yeah, I can see the argument from the equity position and the fact that policies do change with different governments, but it feels like something completely being taken away and not any rejigging. So no rejigging to help the equity concern, no rejigging to help anyone. And Labor has said they won't necessarily commit right away to reinstating it, so we haven't necessarily seen a strong approach from Labor saying what they would do.
Ooh, well, it's tough. We don't see much of a strong approach from Labor on anything at the moment, do we?
They're still being quite quiet on a lot of this stuff. I think they're trying to time. We'll be charitable and say they're timing their run-up.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
It's interesting, the comments and the critiques about equity, because it feels as though that's quite an easy critique for, you know, the government and the right bloc to make. But if we were to come back and turn it around with a bunch of sort of more targeted policy, people love to get up in arms about the positive discrimination of it all, eh?
They do. And look, I think the kind of fun, kind of tricky way to do that would be to target it based on the kind of economic need, or, like, what was the deciles under the old school system, or, like, people from a certain socioeconomic background. So, you know, one of the things that is often missing from the discussions of those equity and entry kind of programs is that often in universities there is some kind of flag, or is some kind of, like, taking into account of someone being from a, like, lower socioeconomic background, or, like, a school that, you know, a lot of people don't go to university, that is a flag. And say, like, for example, the University of Auckland system, I remember seeing that as an equity flag, and I know that does kind of get involved in some of these schemes. If there was, I mean, just figure out some way to do that, right? Get the money, maybe don't get all the money that it costs to do the fee free, but get some of that money and create some kind of extra thing that if someone has spent a certain number of years in a high school that's got a certain, you know, that's in a certain area, put some money in place. It's like, I actually don't think that's hard. I mean, one thing that would be quite hard is that we've just gotten rid of the census. Without a proper data system, so that will make it a bit tricky. But there are people that do things like school zoning all the time. There is that data out there. They would be able to do something. But I think it's just another thing to make government smaller. It's another a slash and burn thing. It's another part of that broader agenda of, like, getting rid of government in a bunch of places.
Fascinating. Lots of really interesting stuff happening with Te Pāti Māori as well now. You know, Maria Meno Kapakingi starting her own party. It feels like she's got quite a lot of people behind her, and like she very well might win her seat.
So her first kind of thing she has to do is to get 500 paid members of a new party that are registered voters to sign up, basically. And that's how you register a political party. And contest the party vote, although hypothetically she wouldn't need to contest the party vote, because actually I think what she will be going for and other sort of independent or regional Māori parties will be going for is just the seat. Because there's this hypothetical scenario where if, like, Māori were doing our best at being strategic, what we'd do is, like, only give our electorate vote, our, like, candidate vote to these independent candidates, and give our party vote to Labour or whoever we wanted to give our party vote to, the Greens, National Act, whatever. We could do whatever. We could even do whatever with that one. But with your electorate, because then that creates the overhang. And so then we've got the scenario where we have this 127-seat parliament. If all seven Māori electorates went to these independent, kind of quasi-independent candidates. And so then you also could have a scenario like, you would have seen maybe the Teal independents in Australia, where you've got these independents all kind of funded by similar machinery, like, around an environment, like, rich people who like the environment, but working together on a number of policies, because they know that as an individual MP, senator, whatever, an individual, you can't get much done. You're one person working against the system and trying to represent a constituency. So they could figure out some kind of interesting model, these independent Māori MPs, Tītai Tokoro party, maybe a Tītai Tonga party coming soon. You know, they could figure out some kind of model where they work together. So yeah, let's watch this space. That would be really interesting and strategic. But I mean, is that what's going to happen? There's just so much work in setting up a political party and doing a campaign. We'll kind of just, everyone will just be watching, I think.
Well, only 6 months out from the election as well.
Yeah, and that's the sensible point there, because if it was more than 6 months, there's a possibility, like, I think there'll be a by-election in the seat if you then create another party and join it. Unless, remember, there was that whole thing earlier with Te Pāti Māori where, like, Meka Whaikiri, like, didn't quite write to the speaker and then said that she was independent. There's all that stuff that you can do and, like, all that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's the timing for starting up a new party is about now, just constitutionally, legally. So, yeah, I mean, and then now I think everyone's just going to be watching Orene Kaipara and Whanatawhiti Mikey Clark to see if they're going to, you know, go with a new arrangement or whether they'll stay with Te Pāti Māori. I think those are the main sort of things there. And everyone's watching to see who Te Pāti Māori will put up in Tītai Tonga and Tītai Tokoro as well.
I know you said to never predict or, like, never bet on Te Pāti Māori's next move, but did you kind of see this coming, these independent offshoots?
Not particularly, but then, like, I hadn't really thought about them. You know, I was like, oh, Te Pāti Māori, I think it might be going, I don't know, maybe it's going okay now, I don't know. And then I was on Friday night, I think I was looking at, I was, like, sitting on the couch and I saw that Glenn at staff was reporting that there was some disquiet and some issues within Te Pāti Māori. I was like, oh, here we go again. And then Monday I got sent to the press release, I was like, oh, okay, here we are. So, I mean, I think it's really hard. We're all trying to figure out what, with Maria Meno Kapakingi, we're trying to figure out what her goals were and why she wanted to be reinstated to Te Pāti Māori. You know, like, you've been sitting with this party, you've been part of this club, they've not treated you well, you've left, then you've challenged them in the High Court to be reinstated. So are you then going into the party to try to rework its, like, governance and leadership? Is that what you're trying to do? Because, like, they said that they don't want to sit with you. So and then she went back in, said that it was quite a hostile environment. I think she was wanting to get some kind of apology and like, something, Taku Te Whera, him reinstated, and a couple of other things she had in her kind of list of things that she wanted, and nothing happened, and they kind of ignored her and weren't very nice to her, didn't really talk to her. So, like, genuinely, I think she was maybe trying to have a go at making Te Pāti Māori better and has realised that that's a lost cause. And, you know, she has called them misogynists, which is quite interesting as well. That's been another point of contention.
Yeah.
So it does seem like she's going to do it this way. And, I mean, look, it makes a lot of sense. Like, just thinking about Māori politics, the idea that, like, it's hyper-local. So sometimes, like, issues that you just wouldn't know about unless you lived in the electorate, unless you, like, whakapapa to the electorate. Mm. Sometimes those issues make all of the difference in an election. That's just what they do, like how the candidates are dealing with them, how they're connected to them, and so on and so forth. So it does kind of make sense that there would be kind of more rohe, more regional-based approach.
Mm.
Does kind of make sense. And treating those MPs all as equal. And again, like in that context I was saying before with the electoral system and the overhang, I'm just like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. And we'll see. Good luck to them. We'll watch it. We'll see. It might be a new era in Māori politics.
Good luck. We'll wait and see, eh? Mm. That's a word from Lara.
Wait and see. We won't make any predictions, eh? Because it's like, I always feel like a cop-out when I'm a political commentator and I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen. But like I did some analysis and the polls were kind of like,
yeah.
Some of them were 30% out for the electorate races, for the Māori electorate.
Mm.
And they're just really hard to poll because you have to have the sampling frame and then you've got to contact everyone. You've got to know if they're Māori, if they're enrolled on the Māori roll, mm. and know if they're going to turn out. There's all these factors involved. So I couldn't do a better poll than that. But,
yep.
yeah, just that's the one thing to watch is that there will be some polls at some point. And who knows?
Who knows?
So, yeah, it's a bit of a cop-out with this, but I've learned my lesson. Don't predict the Māori electorate.
Hey, wise, sage advice to live by. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Lara, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Sure will. Maybe there'll be more Māori political drama. Who knows?
Potentially.
Thanks, Lara. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
A university themed song.
Look at me. I went to school and I got a degree. All my friends call it the big D. I went to school and I got the big D. 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 I went to school and I got the big D. Is your muffin buttered? Would you like us to assign someone to butter your muffin? Excuse me.
What?
Excuse me.
What?
Hey you, over there, on the chaise long in your underwear. What are you doing sitting down? You should be horizontal now. To assign someone to worry your mother. Excuse me.
What?
Excuse me.
What?
Hey, you in the front row, are you coming backstage after the show? Because I've got a chaiselong in my dressing room and a pack of warm beer that we can consume. On the chaise long, all day long, on the chaise long.
On the chaise long, on the chaise long, on the chaise long, on the chaise long. You just heard a bit of political commentary.